Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is July 8th, 2004. Today's session number is BRR 2004-01. Today's speaker is Rick Brown. The lesson for today is Communities and Dialogue, Healing the Wounds of War. Let's listen in.
My name is Rick Brown, and I have been coming to Holden Village for almost 14 years. And have learned a lot here, and through some chemistry or another, was called out about 3 or 4 years ago to start getting involved in doing some international work around building peace. And so what I'm going to be presenting today is the work of primarily one organization, the Karuna Center for Peacebuilding. Karuna means compassion in Hindi, or it's a Sanskrit word, which is an organization that I'm on the board of directors of. That's based in Leverett, Massachusetts, but does work in about 5 or 6 countries right now around the world, bringing together people who are either coming out of a major conflict of some sort or another, or to prevent or resolve conflicts that could be brewing. Now, this is an organization that is one of a number of organizations around the world that are part of what's known as Track 2 diplomacy work. That at Track 1 is diplomacy that's done at the level of governments, where governments try to keep the peace through state departments and foreign affairs offices and so forth. Track 2 is work that's done through nonprofit organizations, or what are known as NGOs, that are working more at the community-based level. Often with churches or other kinds of religious institutions, voluntary organizations, and so forth. The video what we're going to be looking at today chronicles the 5-year experience of the Karuna Center working in northern Bosnia with people, Christian Serbs and Bosnian Muslims, who went through a very horrible conflict, civil war, that involved ethnic cleansing and so forth. And Karuna was invited in to work with people in the communities that were split apart after that war, who wanted to try to reconcile and come to a place of forgiveness to build a foundation for long-term peace. So that's primarily what we're going to be doing today. Before we go into that, though, I do want to just present to you the basic model of peace building that the Karuna Center and many other organizations follow. And I kind of stole from or worked from some of the material that was in Bible study this week to kind of put this together. So some of these concepts may be familiar to you. One of the basic premises of the peacebuilding, Track 2 peacebuilding movement or approach, is that the way that we build peace is to move away from the kill or be killed approach, the defense model, and rather start from the question of what are the root causes of war, what are the root causes of terrorism, of violence, and try to address those. Now, some of those root causes are obvious things like poverty, exploitation, domination, and so forth. And we could spend a lot of time talking about the different that's sort of the general concepts. In the work that we do, there's a strong education component where when we go into a community, we really work with them before we do anything else to really go down deep into what has the history been that has led to the violence that may have occurred in that situation. And if some of you here, for example, at the forum last week where we were talking about the war in Iraq and what were the alternatives there and how do we approach that and how do we think about that, one of the examples that was given is, well, sometimes you just have to go to war because if we hadn't gone after Hitler, where would the world be? And I feel bad that I didn't comment at the time that what that doesn't speak to is the fact that prior to World War II, after World War I, there's a history that most Americans don't really take a look at and pay attention to. And that's the history of how the United States, Britain, France, the Allied powers at that time, what kind of conditions they put Germany into during the 20s and 30s. The kind of humiliation, the kind of deprivation that in many ways became some of the root causes for what occurred there. So if we only stop at the question of, well, what about Hitler, and we don't go back to the root causes, then we don't really do the work that we need to do to understand what is this thing about violence. Can we say yes to peace? Are there alternatives to war? And I think when we look at the Iraq situation 20 years from now, it's not going to look a whole lot different, unfortunately. But anyway, rather than get into that, we start with root causes is these kinds of concepts, these kinds of conditions. And then the ultimate, where we go to is, we're creating a situation of suffering. And we have two choices at that point as individuals and as societies. We can move to this cycle of endurance, which builds character, hope, and ultimately the commitment to work for peace. Or we can go to the path to violence, where we go from suffering to blame. We can see how that occurred in Germany. From blame to demonization, we take away the humanity of the other in order to somehow deal with the suffering that we feel in ourselves. We then go to fear and finally to violence. And what the model that you're going to be seeing here is about is trying to move the cycle this way versus this way. Now, there are all kinds of other points of intervention that one could think about in terms of moving the cycle towards the path to peace. But this particular model is about trying to get people to move away from blame and rather move towards forgiveness, reconciliation, and hope. I'll take a question or two right now, but I really want to get to the video pretty quick.
So you're saying that it's the people who are suffering who have the option of which direction to move?
I'm saying that it's any and all of the above. We who see suffering, we who see the suffering in Iraq, had a choice. We who saw suffering in Germany had a choice. Those people also have a choice. But in the case, I happen to personally believe, this is my personal response, is that with the privileges and power and resources that I have as an American today, I have a lot of options for responding to the suffering in the world. And the option that I've chosen is one that says, I think there are things that we can do to go at the root causes so that people can move to a path of peace. Now again, what we're talking about here is intervening at this level here. Obviously through development aid and other kinds of things, you can get at root causes another way. What we're really talking about here is the fact that, well, the most powerful way to move from fear to hope is knowledge. Okay? And to get that, to transmit that knowledge is the model that that Karuna Center and other organizations that are doing this Track 2 Diplomacy is about. Is knowledge about that goes at root causes, understanding where these various conflicts come from. Often what you hear is the reason why these people are in conflict, because that's the way they've always been. They've had 400 years of history. But we don't look at the economic and other kinds of conditions, the ways in which powerful elites have operated in those societies to divide and conquer peoples, to use the model of divide and conquer in order to maintain their power, the domination piece, that then a couple of generations later, they forget about that. Those are my enemies. I now am demonizing them. So anyway, I think the voices of the people in this video will make it clear what I'm talking about. But we're talking here at the level of how do we break this cycle? How do we move from the fear and demonization towards more reconciliation and forgiveness? Okay? And we'll have time. The tape is about 35 minutes. We should have about 10, 15 minutes to talk a little bit afterwards. So that's where I'm going to get to it. Anything else to clarify? Yeah, you guys are going to want to sit. It's about 10 after. Probably only about 15 minutes to talk. So I'm going to do a couple things. I'd like to, first of all, have an opportunity to have people ask questions, see where they're at. I also want to introduce Nime Bowie, who is from Liberia and is a member of, or works for, WANUP, which is an organization that actually we found out, I didn't know her then, but I did some work in Accra, Ghana, where we partnered with WANUP on a training, and she's now working for them in Liberia. And so she'll be teaching this next week, so you get a chance to get a more in-depth sense of how this work is done also, but she's a resource also today. But just questions of me, and or I'd like to hear questions, reactions, thoughts. Yes?
I'm curious about, in a given country, what criteria you use to identify community leaders as such. I mean, for instance, in this video, it seemed like just about everybody was English speaking, you know, at least in most of the cases. Or at least...
Actually, Vahidin was the only one who was English speaking.
Okay.
But we, because we use translators in that particular. We've evolved that. I mean, that's a question that the board and staff have actually been thinking about a lot in the last couple of years, because with the experience of the Bosnia project, the success there, Karuna has had an explosion in the last 2 years of requests from places all over the world. The only region we're not really actively involved in at this point is Latin and South America. And so we've had to address that very question. Where do we go in? When do we go in? What are the conditions that we're prepared to work with? And we're still in process of determining that, because it's really hard when somebody says, we need you, to say no. But one of the basics that we've come up with is that there has to be some kind of local organization or group that is solid enough that we feel like they can sustain the work after we leave, like Awana, like that Muslim organ, which when we went into Bosnia, there was a group of Muslim women who wanted us to work with them. They weren't really as strong an organization as what we're saying now needs to be in place for us to go in. But we have had the mistake of going to situations where there wasn't really a strong local presence, and it didn't really stick, it didn't really hold. But that's the primary. And then ideally, we're looking for situations where, because this is not work that at least our government really funds pretty much at all. We've been successful at getting the Bosnia work. The last couple of years, we were able to get U.S. Institute for Peace, which is a quasi-governmental nonprofit organization. We got able to get money from them to support that work. In Macedonia, we got money from the Defense Department for transition assistance, you know, creative financing. But there really is not a lot of money put there. We've got some money for the Contact Africa project in East Africa from USAID. Why? East Africa. Think about where East Africa is. Okay? So most of the resources come from private donations. People like me on the board basically pestering people. So having some kind of way, I mean, that the local organization can also raise sufficient funds to do the work, or at least match, is another criteria. And that's pretty much, you know, and then it becomes an issue of can we fit it in, you know, with our resources and time. Yes?
What we saw mostly were stories that reminded us again of how mad we were at the Serbs, because we saw the stories of the dreadful stuff that was done to the Bosnian Muslims. So then, did you work with those ladies to root causes?
Yes.
Because at the end of that movie, I'm mad again, all over again,
yes,
at the Serbs.
Yeah.
So you must have gone,
yes,
deep for root causes.
Yes, the dialogue.
We never got to peek at.
Right. We, you know, the problem is, we made this movie at the end of the project, and so we don't have film footage much, except for that last little piece of the deep work that was done very early on, or the work that, you know, she said there's hundreds of projects now going on in that community where people are doing dialogue, like the work we did yesterday. I mean, the work that we did with Bob yesterday around homosexuality,
yeah,
where people talk to each other in a deep way about their differences, their different perspectives on where they're at, without judgment, or trying to do it without judgment, you know, is what dialogue work fundamentally is about. It's not about convincing the other person that they're wrong or that you're right. It's about getting to deep understanding, to rehumanize that other person, to build a relationship. And you didn't get to see that because we didn't really have the funds to go in and film that stuff. But yes, we did get at that root cause stuff. Olivia talked a little bit about the ways in which propaganda was used, you know, to stir up stuff. I mean, I don't want to get into the details of the Bosnian situation here, but that work was done. Yes. Yes.
I really enjoyed that presentation so much. I want to thank you. I think it's beautifully done. It brought me to tears at several points. I'm reminded of the work of a very favorite author of mine, an organizational psychologist named Margaret Wheatley. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, is she involved with your work?
Cause
she's,
no.
Okay.
But I
she's
know Margaret.
She's doing something
yeah.
real similar
right.
with dialogue.
Right.
And
yep. There, like I say, this field of, I mean, you know, Nima can talk a little bit about her experience. This field is a very new field in a lot of ways. I mean, Meg Wheatley only started doing this stuff in the last 10, 12 years also. This is a new field. It's not well developed. The concepts are still in evolution, you know. And one of the things that's really critical is that, and we should not lose here, is the importance, of the last little message about we're still learning and mostly learning from, quote unquote, our clients about how to do this work. I mean, we have some basic ideas, but our approach to going into these various places is not a expert-student approach. It's a co-creation kind of process, where we have some basic ideas about how you create conditions within which people can establish relationship after a difficult conflict. But we're learning from them, you know, how to do this stuff. And so, and the Contact Africa Network, which is the piece I'm more directly involved in, for example, involves taking people from different parts of Africa and talking to each other with our facilitation about how do we use the model, for example, of the TRC in South Africa, and how do we apply that to Burundi and Rwanda, or potentially to Liberia. Okay, we had a workshop in Cape Town where we had West Africans and East Africans come to Cape Town talking to each other. We just were the, you know, venue to make that happen. And on a note here, just to kind of connect it to home, just this is a story that some of you know, but I think it's really important. This project has a hold Beirut also, in that the Contact Africa project I'm referring to was a brainchild of me and some Africans I met at that contact program that was mentioned here in Brattleboro, and it didn't really have any money. And I, in the summer of 2002, came to Holden and did, we didn't have a film then, we had, you know, handouts and a slideshow. And a couple months later, I received an anonymous gift of a huge amount of money, actually, from somebody in Minneapolis. And I don't know anybody else in Minneapolis other than people I met at Holden. So somebody at Holden has actually made that part of the project happen. So the reason I'm doing this talk here, do talks other places, one of the things I want you to take away is understanding that this is a technique, this is an approach, this is a model that is successful, is practical, can be done, is an alternative to kill or be killed, as our foreign policy, and that I hope that you all will talk to other people about it. I mean, because the most important thing, again, is knowledge and understanding, and not kind of falling into the traps that our propagandists give us about the limited options we have as a society, as a powerful society, to support peace in the world. We have lots of options. Yeah.
Where can you get resources? I didn't see the handout, but the technique, the method, where
yeah.
is it outlined?
Okay, I have some website stuff up here that you can check out. I've got some handouts here that people can take to learn more about it. The needs really are threefold. One is the knowledge piece, obviously money. Anybody who wants to give money, that's great. We really need that. And another benefactor like we had a couple years ago would be great. But there are other schemes and ways of doing this stuff, and I want to give you this example. So I got tired of begging people for money. So, but one of the things, one of my gifts is as an entrepreneurial businessman. And so I had some men in my men's group who are, one's an architect and one's a housing developer. And so we formed a company called Pueblo Homes LLC. And we set up a company for a double mission. One is to build affordable housing. Because in California, there's a real demand for that. Second is to generate profits. Out of those profits, my hope is to set up a foundation that will both fund Karuna, Contact, other organizations, whatever, that are doing Track 2 diplomacy work. And this gets to the second piece. Another part of the money will go towards funding candidates for Congress, maybe me even, who will promote this approach to foreign policy. Okay, because, you know, the project in East Africa, for example, got funded because there was a congresswoman in New York, I want to call her out, Nita Lowey, who used the pork model, earmarking, okay, to say, I want X amount of money to go to doing this project in East Africa, because she got the vision, you know, and decided she could, you know, she would use her little bit of clout to do that. But that's one congresswoman for one little project. I think that we need to get more of our people. So the other thing I want you to take away is if you know anybody, if you know your congresspeople, educate them. If you want them to see the video, call me up. Because the amazing thing is, we have this government that doesn't really know about this, doesn't really, you know, attend to this kind of stuff. And they need to know that this model's out there and can be very powerful and successful. So that's, but that kind of gives you a sense of, if you see her go, well, how do I get connected? I'm, you know, yes, I do training stuff, but I'm much better at making money, actually, than a lot of things. And so that's my gift, that's my way of sort of funneling energy towards this kind of work. Think about what yours could be, if you're inspired by this. Other questions? Comments? Yes?
Rick, this is a, this heals war. Can it prevent war?
You know, that's the long-term question. I mean, the other thing that's difficult about this approach is that it doesn't assume quick fix. 6 years. And you still have a serving woman saying, you know, things like, well, they left, you know, because a few people were attacked. And this was somebody who had been through trainings. I mean, it takes, you know, it takes a long time. It may, you know, there's John Lederach. He, who is a, I think he's a Lutheran. He's one of the theoreticians and practitioners of this work, talks about generations, you know. And so, yeah, will it prevent war? I can't, you know, it's not a binary question. Yeah.
That question, having come from a war situation myself, I think healing helps. Why violence tends to perpetrate itself is when people feel that no one cares and no one is listening. But once they reach to the point where they understand that there are few people out there who cares a lot about what is happening to them, they kind of rethink the option of revenge, of going after the person that hurt them. Because if an institution like Karuna Center went to Liberia and worked with ex-combatants, made them to feel welcome back into their community, made them to feel that the reason why they held the guns were genuine and that they were prepared to listen to them, made them to feel that something about their life mattered. If they were faced by another warlord, come and fight, the first thing would be, do I want to disappoint Rick? Do I want to disappoint those people that have spent so many time, their energy in trying to get me to this place? I realize that there are people who care, so maybe I should lean more towards that side. Sometimes when you are hurt so much, I remember once, at one point in time in my own life, I thought the option would be to join another rebel force in. But then going through all of the issues of healing, one Lutheran pastor who worked with us at the time kept saying there are other options. And today I'm working for peace. So that healing component is very important for stopping conflict.
Thank you.
Rick, do you work at all with, or in Bosnia or any of the other projects with the government in that country at all? Or is it completely separate?
In Bosnia we haven't. Where we have gotten to that place is one of the people who's, I'll answer this question then I'll let you all go. And if people are interested in talking about this some more, I'll be hanging out, let's say, on the Ark after Vespers. In South Africa, one of the people who helped put the project, the contact effort for training in South Africa together is a friend of mine who I had met in Brattleboro named Avril Harding. And Avril was working as a mediator between taxi drivers and taxi companies in Cape Town, which is a big deal. That's public transportation in Cape Town. You don't get around unless you're quite wealthy, unless you do a taxi. And there are lots of conflicts. So that was his work, and he came to the peacebuilding work to kind of learn more about that, and then hosted the project to teach other Africans about the TRC model, because he had been part of that commission also as a freedom fighter who then, you know, come back in from the bush. And but he was inspired also by, in the same way that Nime is talking about, and actually ended up
working with somebody to start a new political party in South Africa that was more focused on peace-building kinds of stuff, and in particular, AIDS issues, which ANC, for some strange reason, has some problems with. And he ended up, this April, getting elected to Parliament. And so, he's working on a program to kind of bring this stuff into the government level in South Africa. That's one example of where, yes, that is happening. So, anyway, thank you all for coming.